Bam, pow, newt. Your geek history lesson on Batman the Silver Age is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And I'm Jason Pixie Boots Inman. Welcome to your Mind University, because this is Geek History Lesson. We like to call ourselves the Mind University because we like to take one character, one concept, or one construct and tell you everything you need to know about them in a little bit less than an hour, sometimes more than an hour. This one probably might be more than an hour. We don't know. Buckle in, every buckaroos. Let's find out. Today's subject is a long running character, a character that some of you might know about. I don't know. He's pretty obscure. I know he hasn't had a lot of movies made about him.
Certainly no TV shows.
You know, people don't talk about this character enough, I think. And, you know, it would behoove, I think DC should publish a few more books starring this character. We're talking about Batman, of course.
Or filter their entire marketing strategy around this character.
I mean, no shade.
No, and fun fact, Jason and I are recording this on Batman Day.
Fun fact. No shade to DC Comics, but like, you might as well just rename your company Batman Comics. That's what you are.
It is called, I mean, DC does stand for Detective Comics, so they're really not lying.
And I say this as a person who loves DC Comics.
Yes.
Yeah. And reads lots
former
of DC
employee
Comics.
Of DC Comics, former employee of DC Comics, in fact.
But like, come on, you're Batman Comics. But so in, this is the third installment.
Second.
The second, excuse me. So there were certain characters, when Ashley and I have done certain Geek History Lessons, certain characters, Superman has become this way, Wonder Woman has become this way, where we're like, they just have 80 years of history. It's going to be too difficult to explain this character in an hour. So we decided to break these characters up into their respective ages. Now, Ashley, do we want to explain the different ages now, or do we want to hold on to that?
We can hold on to that for a little bit.
Okay. But this is Batman the Silver Age. We also have a Batman the Golden Age episode, which you can go look up, which is also excellent and also taught by Ashley as well. Go Google it. I don't know the episode number.
107.
Oh, Ashley knows.
A long time ago.
See, this is why she's teaching it. Oh, yeah. Wow. It has been a long time.
Yep.
And these lessons also take a lot of research, take a lot of time. So I don't know, very excited about diving into Batman the Silver Age.
Yeah.
Ashley, was this requested by anybody? Do we have requests?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. if you're listening to this podcast for the first time, welcome. If you want to request a specific Geek History lesson, there are two places you can do that. You can do that on our Facebook at facebook.com/geekhistorylesson. Mm-hmm. Give us a comment, send us a message, or you can go to our Twitter at GHL Podcast and just tag us there. Be like, hey, GHL Podcast, I want blank.
Those are the only two places that we will actually write down requests from.
And our Patreon.
I've been getting a lot of DMs on Instagram lately. Please don't do that, because I don't check that folder very often.
Well, we just don't. We tell you, we have 383 episodes. We literally have never changed how you send us things.
Well, it's so wonderful that people are enthusiastic, but the way we aggregate requests is very specific.
It's very specific. Those are the only two places that we gather requests. So don't send a carrier pigeon.
Send a carrier bat.
Or a Joker fish.
Please don't, in fact.
Don't send a Joker fish?
Fun fact, I reread that issue in prep for this episode.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fun.
You going to give us our thoughts about that later on?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Ashley, is it time to move into the 10-cent origin?
It is. What is that, Jason?
The 10-cent origin is where Ashley is going to give you the Cliff Notes version of this character in case you're at a fancy Wayne Manor cocktail party and you're dancing the Batusi and the little Julie Newmar walks up to you and goes, "Purr, kitten, tell me about the Batman."
Can you name the other two Catwoman?
Eartha Kitt and
starts with an L.
Lee Merriweather.
That's right.
Yes. The actual one I've met.
Yes. Okay, so your 10-cent origin on Batman is that he is a DC Comics character whose first appearance was in Detective Comics number 27, published in May of 1939.
Fun fact, not the Silver Age.
No, that's the Golden Age.
Which we'll explain.
It was created by Bill Finger and Bob Kane, a.k.a. Bruce Wayne, whose aliases also include Matches Malone, Lefty Knox, and Minuteman. His team affiliations have included the Bat Family, Justice League, Outsiders, Batman of All Nations, and Batman Incorporated. And his abilities include having a genius-level intellect, peak human physical and mental conditioning, whatever that means, master martial artist and hand-to-hand combatant, world's greatest detective, and high tech equipment and weaponry.
And he's rich.
Yeah, he's a rich white guy. That's really his superpower. Great. Is patriarchal and ethnic privilege.
He has a hell of a portfolio.
If you would like to hear some more stories about Batman 66 adjacent moments in our lives, I would encourage you to head on over to patreon.com/Jawin. By the way, that's J-A-W-I-I-N. We do a whole bunch of extra podcasts over there. Jason, how many extra podcasts do we do?
Well, we do.
Officially versus actually.
Well, officially we do. There's no difference there. But yeah, sometimes we skip some weeks. It's fine. We do 4 Geek History Lesson Extras. Mm-hmm. Every month, which is connected this month or this week. You can find Geek History Lesson Extra will be Ashley and I are going to tell our stories about Ashley and I both met Burt Ward, mm-hmm. the Silver Age Robin. Mm-hmm. And we're going to tell about our stories about Batman 66 and meeting Burt Ward. So that's going to be a fascinating story. We also release monthly a podcast called Jason and Ashley's Excellent Adventures, mm-hmm. which is about our personal lives. And at the Justice League pod tier, co-host and last week's Geek History Lesson guest, Jeremy Skinner, and I co-host the podcast where we're reviewing every single episode of Justice League, the animated series. It's called Jason and Jeremy John About Justice League. And we release 2 episodes, sometimes 3 episodes of that a month, just depending on how feisty we feel.
Yeah, you say 2, but it's usually more like 3 or 4.
We've done
fun
4.
Little bonus-y clips.
We've done 4.
Doing lately.
We've done weekly episodes.
Yeah.
So like technically, I am doing like 2 weekly podcasts, I would say.
So if you do the math on that, that can be up to 12 extra episodes a month.
Well, I will. If you want to just do a time... If you want to do time, if you support all those levels, you go to patreon.com. And I didn't mean for us to get it, but like, go check out our Patreon, everybody. We're really proud of those podcasts over there. So
I mean, it's our Batcave.
Yes. If you do the math, actually, it's almost like an hour of GHL extra every month. Mm-hmm. Another 45 minutes. So it's an hour and 45 minutes. And then Justice League pods are both an hour. So that's almost 5 hours of extra content.
Yeah.
Every single month.
So you're getting twice as many GHLs, basically.
Almost doubling your bank. So patreon.com/Jawin, go check it out. And thank you so much to all the super friends that support us over there. They are the whole reason this podcast exists and this podcast is still going, and the reason why we're going to jump into the Silver Age. So let's get to that meet cute, Ashley.
Yeah, what's your Batman meet cute?
It's just weird. Did we do one of these for Silver Age?
Yeah. Well,
or
yes.
Golden Age?
Yes, we do.
It feels weird.
Yeah, and you say that every time. And for Batman.
We should only do it once.
And I listened to the Golden Age. Well, it's because there has been 200 plus episodes, almost 300 episodes since the last time we did
this. I honestly can't tell you. What did I say?
Right. We were both like, I don't know. Yeah. Batman's a bastion of pop culture. Maybe the 66 reruns. I had the toys. We didn't really know. We didn't actually have a great story for that. So it's not a big deal.
Okay.
Want to roll into the next part?
Well, how about this? How about we tell this very brief story, and then we'll give a little brief tease to our GHL extra,
sure.
Ashley.
Sure.
Do you remember where did you first see Batman 66? Like, what was it? What station showed it? Like, when was it on? Like, do
I don't
you
know the answer to that. It was definitely before I started kindergarten. So I
Wow.
3 or 4.
Really early.
They used to play Batman 66 reruns. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you the network to save my life.
Okay.
Because I was an actual child. But I remember thinking that Burt Ward was cute.
Okay.
I have always liked Robin. So.
All right.
And I remember an episode where Batman and Robin were tied to a conveyor belt. And I think they were in maybe a meatpacking plant or something like that.
That's like half the series.
Right. And being very scared about what was going to happen to them.
So I saw the movie first, the Batman 66 movie, before I saw the TV show. So because the VHS tape at the local library. So
at the local library.
Mm-hmm,
wow. Yeah. Shout out to whoever curated that choice.
Yep. Yeah, good choice.
All right. So what's next?
The main lesson. That's where Ashley's going to tell you everything. This is the whole reason why you're here, guys. Like, secretly, the main episode discussion is why you're here. So Professor Ashley's going to tell us about the Silver Age. Finally, let's go.
So
let's buckle up.
In our
engines to speed, turbos to full, nuclear power, right? Whatever they said.
I don't know. In our last episode on Batman, the Golden Age, like I mentioned, that's episode 107.
Previously on Geek History Lesson.
Yes. The Golden Age is basically anything arguably from 1900 up until Flash of Two Worlds. The first appearance of Barry Allen.
Yes.
Was showcase number 4, October of 1956. Sorry, Flash of Two Worlds is later. And for Batman, that means from 1939, because that is when he made his debut. Mm-hmm. So
until 51, did you say? I'm sorry. Or 61?
1956.
56, okay.
Is the introduction of Barry Allen. Okay. Showcase number 4. So the Silver Age is the next era, right? After the gold comes silver. It doesn't get murky until the modern age. So it is considered to be from approximately 1956 to 1970.
Mm-hmm.
However, for Batman specifically, who we are talking about today, many people, many comic historians extend that all the way up to 1979.
Oh, interesting.
And you will have to listen to this entire episode to figure out why, because I am going to go up until 1979.
Okay. Because I know when we did Superman, we stopped at 70 because...
Yes, because you wrote the Superman.
That's right. And we've also done Superman the Bronze Age, which covered the 70s.
Wonder Woman Silver Age, I believe we stopped in 72 or 73 because, like I said, the ages are just general.
Yes.
And they are character specific and your mileage may vary on it. I wrote this episode, so I made this choice.
Ashley, can I ask you a real quick question before we jump into the lesson? And we're going to learn this in the lesson today's episode. Does Batman not experience a Bronze Age, basically? Will we go right to the modern age with Batman?
So it depends.
Okay. We can get into this more as you get into
Your
lesson.
Not going to like super get into that.
Okay.
But the statement on that is it depends because most people consider, I'll just say it right now. Most people consider Batman's Bronze Age to be the dark 80s.
Oh.
So only 80 to 90.
Interesting.
And then we get into, quote, the dark ages or the contemporary age or the modern age. Yeah, whatever we're going to choose to name that. Whenever we get to that section, which will probably be in Superman,
I think
first.
We've already talked about that in Superman.
So Batman is a little bit different because Batman does have such a stark tonal shift in the 80s.
Okay.
Superman and Wonder Woman don't have as obvious a tone shift. So we're going all the way up to the armor your head Batman, basically.
The what?
I gotta armor my head Batman.
That's. Yeah. I mean,
we're not going to 85, but that's sort 85. Of era, right? Yeah. Like the 80s. So if you disagree with me, I don't care. That's fine. Your opinions are your own.
Make your own history lesson.
Exactly. Make your own continuity.
That's right.
So many people will think of the Silver Age Batman as being goofy one-off adventures with covers that are iconic, but foolish. This is not wholly untrue, but it's also not true. So the Silver Age is the first major evolution for Batman. The stories are much more episodic, one-off monsters of the week, think classic Doctor Who, than continuity-based like they are today. But the Silver Age also introduces the idea, to quote Grant Morrison, of Bat God for the first time. So an example of the silliness
Do you want to explain Bat God concept?
Sorry. Hold, it's literally my next point.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So an example of the silliness is like the Rainbow Batman cover and storyline from Detective Comics, Volume 1, Number 241 from 1957. It's actually really fun. The reference is frequently made in the contemporary age of comics. Actually, Superman brings it up in continuity several times. My next note says, Jason, can you explain the concept of Bat God?
So Bat God is essentially this concept that was kind of popularized by Grant Morrison. Mm-hmm. But it's the idea that it all cruxes from The Dark Knight Returns, where Batman in 1985 fought Superman and won.
Yeah.
And so it became this idea of, could Batman actually beat Superman, the most powerful superhero of all time? And the general answer is, and this is where the Bat God concept comes from, the Bat God concept is that Batman could beat anybody if he had enough time to plan it.
And Colin could get the drop on them.
Yes.
And obviously Superman could destroy Batman.
Yes. So this is this idea that Batman becomes Bat God because, like, it's this idea that, like, he is invincible mm-hmm. if he could plan the battle.
So if you look back at the Silver Age, you see seeds of this idea being planted. Okay. It's not obviously not as strong as it is in The Dark Knight is a really fabulous example of that.
I kind of think it's where it originated.
But it starts here because this is where the modern Justice League is introduced.
Oh, the classic Big Seven.
Exactly. V. Starro. And in order to stand up next to Superman and Wonder Woman and these other pantheon-esque godlike characters, Batman kind of has to level up in terms of his overall abilities, even down to how hard he can punch someone versus if you're looking at Golden Age Batman, who's very much a dude in a suit.
Well, yes, if you're thinking about 1956 Batman, right, mm-hmm. on this Big Seven Justice League, you have Superman, you have Wonder Woman, you have Green Lantern, you have Flash, you have Martian Manhunter. Mm-hmm. Who am I missing? I'm missing one more. Because like Batman, I'm missing seven.
Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. Martian Manhunter.
Aquaman. Thank you.
Sorry.
Aquaman. Forgot Jason Momoa. And so, Batman is the only non-powered.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Golden Age Batman just caught a lot of jewel thieves.
Yeah.
It was always like they were stealing diamonds.
Oh, we are definitely, I'm going to tell you the events of an issue that is Batman defending the 1%. So gird yourself.
I look forward to it.
The Silver Age is also the first time that stories introduce a darkness into Batman, both visually and emotionally, that will only bloom and grow and get more murky and ethically ambiguous as we go along.
Mental issues.
Yeah, I mean, as a member of only the Dead Dads Club, I mean, not surprised at all. Most comic book historians credit which famous editor for Batman's Silver Age evolution, Jason?
Oh, you're asking me the question?
I am.
Editor?
Editor. You know the answer. We talked about him in many Bat Family issues. Episodes.
Oh, well, okay. Is it Carmine Infantino?
It's not. He worked on it, but he was not the editor.
Oh, I mean, well, my gut tells me Denny O'Neill, but I knew he was a writer.
Yep. You're saying all these names. Julie Schwartz.
Oh, yes.
Which you knew. If you've listened to our Barbara Gordon episode, we talk about Julie Schwartz a lot.
Yeah.
So Schwartz is responsible for overseeing the introduction of the Justice League, updating it from the Justice Society, which we just talked about a few minutes ago, mm-hmm. and for placing Batman in a position of prominence and leadership of the team for the first time.
Okay.
So it was his mandate. He also mandated an update of Batman's costume, including the introduction of the yellow oval around the bat symbol. Personally, for me, that's one of my favorite aspects of the bat suit. I love a bat suit with the yellow oval. It's why I love Cassandra Cain's Batgirl costume. Jason, now I have an important question for you.
My favorite part of the Batman costume? Of course, it's the gauntlet with the razor claws. It's the 90s ass bat suit. No, I'm sorry. Which question?
What I was going to ask you later on, do you like the yellow oval or what is your favorite detail of the bat suit?
Oh, of like the kind of the classic
any
standard.
Any bat suit. And this is like a side question for the listeners. Do you want a solo episode on like our favorite bat suits?
I mean, maybe.
Or favorite costumes.
So the first question is, am I pro yellow oval?
Yeah.
Or am I pro?
Because the yellow oval is divisive.
It is divisive.
Mm-hmm.
I am not pro yellow oval.
My heart. How dare you get off this podcast?
No, I love the classic black symbol on the gray.
Okay.
But I will say this.
Yes.
I know it's a story that you're not a big fan of.
That's okay.
And we already talked about it. Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns, mm-hmm. very famous graphic novel in 1985. Frank Miller gave the best explanation for the yellow
oval. Yes, he did, and I will absolutely tip my hat.
The idea of presenting a target mm-hmm. because it's his most padded
armor.
Area.
Yeah.
Which, as soon as I heard that, the yellow oval finally made sense to me. I prefer a bat suit. I'm a short-eared Batman guy.
That was a question I was going to bring up later.
Short ears. we can go more detail. I'm short ears, no oval. But my favorite part of the bat suit.
Yeah.
Besides the scallops on his gloves.
I do love the scallops. Yeah.
I love his utility belt.
Do you like it to be yellow?
Of course.
Yay.
Yep. But I want big,
bulky
patches. You've
got to be able to put a lot of stuff in it.
Oh, I want it to look like a rucksack.
Yes. Do you remember a few years ago, it might have been DC Direct, sold a Batman utility belt, and it was huge. And it was for a man who probably weighed like 300 pounds. Like it was for a chunky Batman.
Oh, no. If you put all the stuff that he needed to put into that belt.
God, it would weigh like what I weigh.
One, it would pull your pants down.
Yeah.
But two, it would also, it would weigh like 300 pounds.
Yeah. Okay. So Jason, here's my second question of can you name Can you name the artist who was tapped by Julie Schwartz to handle the Batman costume updates? And I will say, you have already said his name.
In this episode?
You have.
I did?
Legendary Flash artist?
Was it Carmine Infantino?
It is Carmine Infantino. Well,
my other guess was going to be Dick Sprang.
It was not Dick Sprang.
But Dick Sprang is a Golden Age Batman artist.
He is, yeah. Yes. It draws my favorite chins in comics. Mm-hmm. So, if you remember...
I didn't know Carmine updated Batman. That's really cool.
Carmine Infantino is all over this episode.
Yes, he is. Oh my gosh.
I went back and I read a lot of these and I looked at a lot of these iconic panels. Truly, like, just...
Carmine, I think, not even
a great comic book artist, a great artist.
Look, somebody might type this in and I might be completely wrong. I think Carmine Infantino is also responsible for the Barry Allen Flash costume, which is considerably one of the greatest costumes of all time.
Well, you know, we did our Barry Allen episode a long time ago. Someone else can Google it.
I'm going to Google it real quick, but I'm looking forward to all... I can hear the people typing.
Screaming into their iPhones right now.
Oh, God. All the YouTube comments coming right now.
If you remember from our Batman the Golden Age episode, Batman's family expanded pretty quickly, and the Silver Age pretty much rolled all of this back and went back to the tried and trusted formula of Batman and Robin.
Carmine Infantino designed the Flash costume.
Heck yeah, good call.
Retract those comments, you idiots.
Yeah, say congratulations, Jason's, you nailed it.
No, they won't say that.
There's an issue in 1963 known as Robin Dies at Dawn, which fakes the death of Dick Grayson, and the cover is homaged when Jason Todd's Robin actually dies in Death in the Family. So pretty dark for the Silver Age. Not so fun fact, Alfred was actually killed off in 1964.
I knew this.
And replaced by Aunt Harriet. Fans of the Batman 66 TV show will remember her prominently from her live action appearances.
Are you going to talk about...
Where she was played by Madge Blake.
So. Are you going to talk any more about Alfred?
I'm just not only to say that he was dead for like a decade, which to be fair is only one of the first of many times he died. So like, thanks, Julie Schwartz, for setting the bar on that. No, I was not going to talk anymore about Alfred. Did you want to bring something up?
Well, there was a time where Alfred was secretly a villain in the Silver Age.
I was not going to talk about that.
The outsider. And one of the times that happened, it was in between one of his deaths. So he died and then this outsider came back who suddenly like knew everything about Batman. And they was like, it was revealed like, oh, it's Alfred.
Yes. And they literally introduced Aunt Harriet to be like, no homo in Batman.
Yes, they did. But they retconned that Alfredness. The Alfred death so many times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Alfred's died a billion times. So, like, don't be that sad.
And at the time of this recording, Alfred is currently dead in modern continuity.
Yes.
Again.
Yes.
Again.
Yeah, just a time stamp. I did have that note.
He'll come back to.
I do think killing Alfred is, like, maybe the most brutal thing you can do in the Bat family.
It's rough.
I'm not a fan of it as a trope. I'm not saying it's never been done well. I'm not saying it won't be done well in the future because it will happen again. It's just not my preferred trope.
It's not my preferred trope because they've never committed to it.
Mm-hmm.
To me, if you're going to kill Alfred, it has to be like Gwen Stacy. He has to stay dead for like 20 years.
Yeah, or longer.
To have an impact.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, it's meaningless. Or it has to be like Barry Allen's original death.
Yes.
Like it has to like
to save the world.
It has to
save the multiverse.
It has to galvanize Batman to move on or to do something different.
And then inspire the best Flash of all time.
Yep.
Together, Bruce and Dick went on a decade or so's worth of sci-fi gimmicky adventures.
Yeah.
And their dynamic did expand to include a third when the World's Finest title took off during the Silver Age. Jason, what is World's Finest? Who was in it?
Well, of course, everybody's favorite hero, Plastic Man.
That's true. That's not a lie.
Teamed up with Batman and Robin, and they went on many beach adventures where they had to hang 10 across the greatest surf waves of Hawaii.
Plastic Man is actually in a lot of the, oh my gosh, what are those called? The little short stories at the end of a comic book.
Backups?
Yes, thank you.
I didn't know if you had a specific time.
Yes, he was in a lot of the backups.
The World's Finest is, of course, the title of the first Superman-Batman team-up book.
Ooh, yes.
Which also is a great title. Would be a great title for a movie.
I can't believe, or a TV show.
Yep.
Can't believe it hasn't happened
That's
yet.
What they called the, in the 90s when they had the Batman anime series and Superman anime series crossover.
Mm-hmm.
They titled it World's Finest.
I believe it's also the title of the first Flash and Supergirl crossover episode.
I think so.
In preparation for this episode, I read a whole bunch of World's Finest.
There's some good issues in there, and there's also some clunky bad ones.
There are some good ones. Most of them follow the same formula.
Of course.
Which, to be fair, it's the same thing happens in modern comics. So it's not a dig on the Silver Age. This is just what we're talking about right now.
Oh, yeah. Repeat patterns. That's what we just talked about, like,
how many
times Alfred has been killed and brought back.
So I thought, I would pick a shining example of what a classic World's Finest story is, and I would break it down for you. Spoiler alert, most of them deal with Batman and Superman being mad at each other and Robin having to make his dad stop fighting. So I am going to recount for you the events of World's Finest Comics number 95. And I'll share the picture on social
media. Quite a ways into the run of World's Finest.
Yeah, I think I picked this one because it is extra silly, but the beats are the same. Okay. So we are going to talk a little bit more about the darkness of the Silver Age, but we got to do some of the levity.
But this is a prime example of Batman and the Silver Age.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Batman and Robin are hanging out when they discover that Batman suddenly, out of nowhere, has the same powers as Superman. Welcome, Intern Brego.
Intern Brego just came up to the mic.
He did. While trying to save some Gothamites from a burning building, Superman shows up, insults Batman to his face, so Batman refuses his help and says, "No, Superman, I don't need you." Batman uses his newfound super strength to pick up a bunch of metal and form a giant rotary saw blade and cut two buildings apart so only one of them will burn and not the other one, which happens to be a bank, the 1%. Batman and Superman say more nasty things to each other. Then Batman and Superman compete to see who can save more people all around the world until they finally decide that they're going to fight each other and prove who is more super. Suddenly, Robin gets beamed up out of a cornfield to an alien planet where he discovers two aliens who made a bet about whether or not they think Batman, with the same powers as Superman, is a better superhero or not. They threaten to wipe Robin's memory of their confession, but their supervisor shows up, so they panic and send Robin back to Earth with all of his memories intact. Knowing that their ray-addled brains won't let them believe what he's discovered, Robin tricks Batman and Superman into working together. They overcome their hypnotism and shake hands, proving that they're friends again. The aliens both lose their bets. Their supervisor turns up the rays, so Batman and Superman will never fight again. Jason, thoughts?
My only thought is that that is a lot of plot for like about 30...
It's about 36 pages.
About 36 pages. That's a lot. That's a lot.
There are, if you go and read anything published before like 95, there are so many words on the panel.
Yeah. There's a lot of plot movements. That's very similar to like, I think a Batman Brave and the Bold episode that they did, which is very funny.
We're actually going to talk about the introduction of the Brave and the Bold comic as well.
Well, the cartoon was very like, you know, always aping this Silver Age style. So it's great. I mean, what I think is so funny is that you can sort of tell in 1950s and 1960s storylines, and this happened in Star Trek, this idea that, you know, office and suburbia was like kind of a new concept.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea that alien civilizations would have supervisors, like a supervisor would be like, "Gleep. Gleep, what are you doing with the humans, Gleep?"
Like, this is literally...
"Why are you giving them powers? I told you to convert those power converters."
This is literally like two dudes in an office building watching two roaches climb the wall and being like, I bet you a buck this one will go first. Yeah. And then their boss comes along and is like, "Jenkins, you need to be working."
No, Gleep Jenkins.
Yeah, exactly.
"My name is Gleep Jenkins. And while I'm not providing for my wife, I bet on roaches climbing up the side of the wall."
He's the energy vampire of the office. You just know it.
"I'm the best insurance salesman this side of the Alpha Quadrant. Sector 28125.
They are fully clothed aliens, though. They're not just like little green men or grays.
"Do you need cosmic radiation insurance? Gleep Johnson is here for you. Gleep Jenkins is here for your services."
I bet Tex would love to franchise with
Gleep
him.
Jenkins?
Yeah, Gleep Jenkins.
I'll add him to the list.
Great. Super. Look forward to his appearance.
You know, I don't think that's a bad storyline. And I think it's interesting how much... this is something a lot of people forget about, that how much Robin is prominent in the World's Finest title.
Robin is very...
He's the third cast member.
You think of World's Finest as being the Batman and Superman show, but it really is an adventure. It is a story of all three of them. And then... Supergirl does get roped in a little bit later on, or Jimmy will get roped in a little later on.
There's a
classic cover where Batman and Superman are forcing Robin and Jimmy to dig their own graves, which is like a very dark concept for the Silver Age, but it's a very silly issue. So, okay, so we talked a little bit about World's Finest. Let's go back to like the Batman and Detective Comics title. In the Silver Age, Batman's rogue gallery gets a big update. Blockbuster is introduced in the Silver Age, although he does not become super, super prominent until the 90s, where he gets adopted as a Nightwing villain. Other villains introduced in the Silver Age include Man-Bat, Poison Ivy, Roz and Talia al Ghul. Damian Wayne is technically conceived during this time.
It depends on your
relationship to the continuity.
Yeah, I mean, the storyline that he is supposedly the night that it happened,
yeah,
like, doesn't happen until the late 80s.
Yes, that's true.
So, but if you slam all of Batman's continuity down into one timeline, which we've done,
yes,
we've done an episode of Batman's chronological timeline, Damian would have to have been born somewhere in this time period.
Yes. And then whisked away for a long, long time.
Yes, and he didn't see Daddy for about a decade.
Yes. Other Golden Age villains get updates during this time, including Two-Face, who returns to life after a, like, 15-year-long stint in limbo.
Yeah.
Which is...
The DC writers...
I was not familiar until I did my research for this episode.
The DC writers, the Silver Age is what created the modern Two-Face that we all know. The Two-Face that we saw in... Dark Knight, mm-hmm. The Two-Face that is my favorite Batman villain.
Yes, he is.
It comes from this time period because the old Golden Age Two-Face was so unpopular that the Batman editors were like, don't ever let any Batman writer put this character in a book.
Yeah, and then Julie Schwartz was like, I do what I want.
Well, and that's the thing, like, Julie Schwartz, because he also did this when he was in editing the Superman books as well, mm-hmm. he was very much like, let's look back at some of the characters and stuff that we hadn't done in a while. That's the same thing.
No, he was such a modern thinker.
Yeah, he also was the reason why they rehabilitated the Ultra Humanite, who mm-hmm. was basically Lex Luthor 1.0.
Yes, yeah. The Silver Age also marks the beginning of Joker's more homicidal turn. He's becoming more of a bastion of toxic behavior, you know, kind of like as we know him today. Mm-hmm. So I think it's so interesting, Jason, that you brought up the Joker Fish, the Laughing Fish cover mm-hmm. at the beginning, because for me, when I think of classic Batman Silver Age covers, I'm closing my eyes and thinking about it right now, I think of Rainbow Batman uh-huh. and the Laughing Fish.
You think of a little happy little tree and a nice little stream going by and then
with some fish in it, polluting the Gotham. Know, most of the plot of that issue is nice, him polluting the Gotham
nice
River.
Nice little bat signal up in the sky, shining over, you know, a couple little buildings, maybe a mugging happening in the alleyway. You know, it's your own Gotham City. You can create, we'll do whatever you want.
You know, Bob Ross was a Superman fan and not a Batman fan.
I actually think Bob Ross probably thought comics were silly. I bet you Bob Ross only liked Archie comics.
You know what? Archie comics are great.
Archie comics are great. But I bet you he was like, I don't want to read about no murders and stuff.
That's fair.
I want to read about these kids kissing and having ice cream shakes.
Exactly. And making happy little paintings. But so the Laughing Fish cover was published in 1978.
It's pretty late.
Yeah, so late. And this is one of the reasons why I'm sort of extending this to 1979. Also, there is a publishing reason why as well.
But, very iconic cover.
But it sort of exemplifies the Silver Age for you, right? It's that.
I always think of it as Silver Age
and
cover.
It's Batman and Robin being tied to a chair and the Joker coming out of the clock, which led to the Batmobile. To me, that's another very classic Silver Age cover.
Well, the other one I think of, mm-hmm. and you might get to this a little bit later, the other one I think about is it's one of the early issues of the Neil Adams, Denny O'Neil run. And it's the cover where, you know, it's symbolic, but Joker is like the size of the city and he's holding this giant playing cart and Batman is like hanging on the playing cart like, oh my God, I'm going to slide off.
Yeah, that's a great cover. Great.
And that's another one where I think of like Silver Age.
And in the Silver Age, this is where we get Bruce Boy as Playboy. Bruce Boy, as a playboy. We see him starting to date a lot and have a lot of romantic interests. Silver St. Cloud, probably most famous, who is able to deduce that he is the person beneath the cowl. In continuity, they say based on his chin. I say because she's seen him naked. That's a Green Lantern the movie joke for you. You're welcome.
I believe this might also be the era that introduces Vicki Vale.
It is, mm-hmm. Who a lot of Batman movie fans will be.
Who goes on to Batman 1989.
Well. Yeah. Yep. Speaking of Robin, which we were not doing, it's also
we don't do that enough, Ashley. You know, I think
the show or in our lives?
I think our fans would demand that we talk about Robin a little bit more. And I think we should give them exactly what they want.
Absolutely. So I'm so glad that I brought that mm-hmm. up. It was during this time, around 1964, that Dick founded the OG version of the Teen Titans, which is a pretty monumental shift in the Batman family.
TEENTITANS.
Teen Titans, mm-hmm. let's go.
Although they wouldn't have been that in the 60s. It would have been like T-E-E-N-T-I-T-A-N. Like, it'd be like sort of
that's
Jim Morrison.
Good, yeah. Actually.
Teen Titan Go. Bow, down, down.
Yeah, but the OG Teen Titans are pretty square. I talk about them pretty extensively in our Teen Titans Part 1 episode, number 125. You can check that out. Mm-hmm. It's not until, like, Wolfman and Perez get their hands on them that they become cool,
A bunch of squares.
Well, they're just more square than like when Beast Boy gets
involved. Robin was hanging out with alien insurance salesmen, so I guess he was pretty light.
He was like, you know where I feel most at home, old chum? An office building.
Kid, how many times do I have to tell you? I said, get out of my office. I'm Gleep Jenkins. I've got insurance to sell.
Well,
out of my office, you little brat.
Look, I was raised inside Wayne Enterprises. I'm very comfortable in a corporate environment.
Look,
would you like something collated? I can do that for you.
I don't even know what that means. We don't have collated. We don't use paper in my culture, you idiot kid. Get out of my office.
God damn it. Another interview sunk. Why can't I benefit from nepotism? I'm Dick Grayson.
Who are you talking? Are you a comic character? Get out of my office.
Do you know how many words are on these pages, sir?
Well, in comics, they're always like, oh, if only. And like,
many thought bubbles.
I've always wanted characters to be like, who are you talking to?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're going to get to Batgirl, and let me tell you, she has that. A huge impetus for some of the goofier turns of the Silver Age comics was the popularity of what we now call the Batman 66 show, which we've talked about extensively.
Which we're just called Batman, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Adam West and Burt Ward brought a campy levity to the characters, which shaped their on-panel counterparts for years going forward. We're going to talk more about that on our Geek History Lesson Extra episode, which we told you about already, so check that out.
You cannot talk about this era with how much that show influenced the comics. The show was super popular, and for a while, the Batman comics just aped the show, basically.
And I felt it was important to bring this up because the integration of mass media and the machination of the corporate overlords are something that I think most people only equate with modern movies and comics, like the MCU, like the Age of Ultron v. Age of Ultron discussion, although it has, in fact, been going on for quite some time, decades, in fact. In addition to World's Finest, DC Ultra also introduced another title called Brave and the Bold, pretty much so Batman could team up with super friends besides Superman, and then they would eventually extend this to other characters besides Batman as well. Okay, so remember how I talked about how Batman actually got darker during the Silver Age? We're finally going to circle back to that because Batman 66 went off the air in 1969. It ran for 3 years, and DC needed to revitalize their Batman comic book title because the sheen of TV stardom had worn off and not as many readers were reading as they were when Adam West first brought his magic to the airwaves. So Jason, do you know what they did to revitalize the Batman comic?
I'm sorry.
1969.
Okay. Oh, post the series.
Yes.
I mean, is this when Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams come on?
Yes, they brought on young book artist Neil Adams. Yeah. Okay. Bonus question.
I wasn't certain if it was that early, but yeah, cool.
Do you know either which title Neil Adams was drawing before Batman, or do you know what was the first title where he drew Batman? It's okay if you don't.
They're not the same?
They're not the same. They are two different titles.
The title he was drawing before Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say...
Can give you a hint if you want a hint.
Please, I would love a hint.
There is an Eisner-nominated series that has the same title right now, worked on by three people we know.
Strange Adventures?
Strange Adventures!
Okay. All right, what did he do post-Batman?
I don't know the answer to that.
Oh, I thought that was like part
No, the other one was, what was the first title where he drew Batman?
What was the first title?
It was The Brave and the Bold, number 79. It was published in 1968, the year before.
My guess was going to be All-Star Squadron, so.
And what's cool about this is that Brave and the Bold issue is it's Batman and Deadman teaming up.
Oh, cool.
Which is a combo that we really like.
And Deadman is also a character that Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams use quite a bit.
Yes. Very effectively, very appropriate, I would say. Yeah. Deadman is a tough character, I think, to get right.
Has a better look than a better story.
Yes. I also don't like the way they write his dialect, but that's just me. When Adams was brought onto Batman, the Batsuit got another update, including, most importantly, long ears. So Jason, I want to ask you, why are you a short ears guy?
Okay. So here you go. When you think about Batman, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not thinking about alien insurance salesman.
Are you sure? Because I am.
Well, Robin is, but not
Dick
Batman.
Definitely is.
I just think when I think about Batman, I think, to be honest with you, when I'm reading a Batman story in the art, mm-hmm. I kind of want a medium. I don't want the ears too long. I don't want them too short.
You don't want them like Dark Knight Returns, tiny, tiny?
Yeah, that's almost a little bit too short. Mm-hmm. I want them like kind of medium.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the perfect. I think Jim Lee kind of does like the perfect length.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he looks better mm-hmm. with shorter ears
mm-hmm.
because some artists like draw his ears like 10 feet long and you're like, that is so impressive. You know how many fans and jet engines those would get caught in?
I like.
What do you, I know you're a long, you're Tim Sale, like kind of long ears.
Tim
guy.
Sale draws my favorite version of Batman. Yeah.
I would call Neil Adams' ears a medium length.
Yes, but he was the first one to lengthen
yes,
them.
Yes, he was.
To make them not yeah. just squat little short. Yes, they're definitely not Tim Sale long.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I always liked the long ears because when I was first reading Batman, back in my day, we did not have cell phones and Bluetooth. So I always thought that he had...
Bluetooth.
I always thought that he would have had radio antennas inside there and that was how he could communicate with Oracle. Mm. Like when I was reading comics in the 90s, it made sense to me that he would have really long ears. How, that was how my grasp of technology worked.
You gotta,
as a child.
You actually have to think about it. Like in the 60s or 70s, like Batman probably had to pull a radio antenna out of one of his ears. And it's like 5 feet tall and like dialed the number.
Yeah,
get a rotary phone, cell phone.
This is, we used to say this a lot when we first started. Geek is just in comics.
Yeah,
like
comics.
You just kind of have to give it away to magic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neil Adams is also credited with being the first one to draw the cape in the longer style, looking more like bat wings, which is also a trope that I really like in terms of Batman's design.
How do you mean by bat wings? Oh, you mean like actual bat wings?
Yes. Like
oh, okay.
It's the, like they're,
I thought
they're,
the plane, I'm sorry.
They're like ribbed.
Yeah.
And they're shaped more like bat wings, well, or they furl out like a shadow, which is something that Tim Sale would pick up later. And a lot, Greg Capullo does a lot where it's like the cape has a life of its own and it starts with Neil Adams.
If you go, and this is perfect actually, if you go and look at kind of the Silver Age cape lengths,
mm-hmm.
they're usually around the lower buttocks.
Yes, they're shorty.
Or the mid knee
yeah.
level. Now, Neil Adams, I think, is the first Batman artist that he lowers that Batman cape to almost ankles or it's dragging on the floor at all times,
mm-hmm.
which creates this idea and gives artists a lot of ability to make it like a Dracula cape.
It's scarier.
Now, it's so interesting that you brought this up about the Batman cape,
mm-hmm.
Because I'm a big believer that Superman's cape should be knee level and no longer.
Mm-hmm.
Superman's cape does not go down to his ankles.
I agree.
But it's also going to lead us, Ashley, into...
Action figure spotlight.
Action figure spotlight. Very recently, Todd McFarlane, who now has also started on Batman,
yep,
drew a bunch of Batman Year Two. Very famous for Spawn.
Great at capes.
His company now has the toy license for DC Comics,
mm-hmm.
and they just announced this insane.
Oh, I saw
blue
it.
Blue and gray
yeah.
Batman action figure where his cape is like a mile long.
When I saw that cape, my first thought is that action figure going to fall over.
I did too.
You got to lean.
It's also like the first Batman action figure I've seen in a long time where I've been like, I think I might want that. So that is our action figure spotlight for today. It's the McFarlane toys. I don't know what they're calling it. I think they're calling it like a Batman Year Two. It's based on
yeah.
McFarlane's art.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, you can trace that all back to Neil Adams.
This era as well, Danny O'Neill introduced, this was the first time that all Batman comics were set at night. That never happened consistently before this. So I thought that's a fun fact.
It is a fun fact.
So now I want to rewind a little bit. I want to go back to 1967 because we have the introduction of all new original Batgirl. Barbara Gordon is introduced. We do have a full length episode on Barbara Gordon. She is introduced in Detective Comics number 359.
What year was that again? I'm sorry.
1967.
Okay.
Because there was...
Because of the TV show, right?
Because of the TV show.
Yeah.
There had previously been a Batgirl.
Kate Kane.
Betty Kane.
Oh, Betty Kane.
Kate Kane's niece.
Ah.
Kate Kane was Batwoman, and then she was rehabbed in the modern age.
That's great.
So, I'm going to tell you what happens in her introductory comic, because to me, this is such a classic Silver Age Batman issue. Fun fact, I used to have a dress with this cover on it. And for me, this is a White Whale issue. I would love to own a reading copy of it just to have it. And the bat purse on the cover is iconic. So this is what happens when Barbara Gordon is first introduced. Self-proclaimed Plain Jane Dr. Barbara Gordon, she's a PhD, is sewing her costume for the policeman's ball in the Gotham City Library. You can't actually rent sewing machines from libraries. That's not the weirdest thing about this. She is, she has converted a closet in the public library into her personal changing room, from whence she emerges as Batgirl, having named herself after Batman without his permission. Now, she's only dressing in this costume to go to this event to support her dad. Mm. She's not intending to be a superhero. She just thinks it's a cute look. She hops in her roadster and heads to the policeman's ball. But then a pair of goons accost the car in front of her. They are Mothmen. They work for Killer Moth. They sadly do not look like the cryptids. I'm so sad to report. Inside the car is Bruce Wayne, who's dragged out of his limousine until Batgirl happens upon them and saves him. Instead of saying thank you, Bruce runs off and leaves Batgirl alone to fight Killer Moth. But then he returns like 6 pages later as Batman. They fight off Killer Moth together. The next day, Batman and Robin learn that Killer Moth has been blackmailing Gotham City billionaires and extorting money from them, the 1%. This goes on for months and months and months and months. Barbara keeps training and worrying about how plain she looks. She's a brown belt in judo, which to me feels slightly misogynistic. Why not just make her a black belt? It's a better shorthand. Mm-hmm. By the way, she is also so beautifully drawn by Carmine Infantino in this book. I took several screenshots to share. I cannot believe the amount of time she goes, boy, I'm plain, plain Jane Barbara Gordon. I can't believe I'm so, like, she looks so beautiful.
She's constantly talking down on herself.
Yeah, because patriarchy. Bruce Wayne commissions Barbara Gordon to find him a rare book. It's actually a book of Psalms. So when it arrives, she drives to his mansion to deliver it in the middle of the night, judging by the coloring of these panels, when she discovers that Bruce has been murdered by the Mothmen. This is actually where the bat purse comes in. She's carrying this $150,000 book of Psalms inside the bat purse.
And am I right or wrong that this is Miss Mothman later becomes Killer Moth?
It is. Killer Moth is their leader, yes. Yeah, yeah, but yeah. The Mothmen are what they call his goons.
Oh, they're the henchmen. The henchmen.
Yeah. So it turns out Bruce Wayne wasn't dead. Batman and Robin left out a lifelike dummy and were hiding in the shadows ready to pounce. And they're mad that Batgirl beat them to it and starts taking down the goons. When Batgirl learns that she's ruined their plan to get back all these billionaires' money, she bursts into tears and they leave her back at Wayne Manor to chase the bad guys because, and I quote, we can't worry ourselves about a girl. Unwilling to be put in a corner, Batgirl steals a bat cycle and follows them to the Moth Mansion, that is what it is called, where Batman and Robin get stuck in a gravity-free room floating toward the ceiling like they're in Mary Poppins. But Batgirl's a smartie. She's a doctor with a PhD. So she puts a magnet in her boots and she's able to free the dynamic duo from the room through the power of a magnet that might be the size of a quarter. They fight the Mothmen. Robin is apparently a Key and Peele fan because he says the word Tooken on panel. Batgirl is able to find Killer Moth hiding in a control room because he still smells like the perfume she was wearing earlier, and Batman punches him right in the head. Batgirl later meets... Yeah, truly, that's what happened.
Okay.
Batgirl later meets Commissioner Gordon and is introduced as part of the Bat family. And when James and Babs are at home that night, he says, quote, that Batgirl sure is tops in my books. Too bad you couldn't be a bit more like her, Babs. Which I think confirms our headcanon that he knows it's Batgirl all along.
Of course.
And that's Batgirl's first appearance.
Yay.
Yeah, it's both sillier and better than I thought it was going to be.
One, I just think of Batman being like, how dare that girl, like, screw up. I spent so much money on that lifelike dummy, and then I wanted to I wanted to get my aggression out of those guys.
I'm sad to tell you, it's more Robin than Batman. Robin's a real dick to her in this issue.
Literally.
Pun absolutely intended.
How dare that girl punch up those bad guys that we want to hit, Batman.
Very that.
Unwanted teenage male aggression.
So they welcome Batgirl into the family, and then in 1969, 2 years later, Batman faces his biggest challenge. Jason, do you know what it is?
Therapy.
Dick Grayson goes to university.
Oh no!
He leaves Wayne Manor.
Who will get my barbecue sauce out of the refrigerator when I need it?
I can't remember if Alfred's alive at this time, so who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Bonus question. Do you know what the name of the university is that he goes to?
Oh,
it's the name of a very famous river and a very famous trading company and a bay.
Hudson University.
Hudson University. Yep. And because sadness, I guess Alfred is alive. Bruce and Alfred board up Wayne Manor and they move into a high rise in Gotham.
Oh, yeah.
In a move that Christopher Nolan would later steal in his Dark Knight trilogy.
Oh, no. This is a period that later Batman writer Grant Morrison would call the James Bond period.
Where
he was the happening bachelor out of Wayne Tower.
Yes. Yeah. I know.
Put the plywood on the windows, Alfred. We can't live here anymore.
No, it's fair. He's like, oh no, my son moved like upstate. I am crushed.
He's literally like an hour away.
Yeah, at most. Because he's back in Gotham all the time fighting crime.
It's not like he went off with Gleep Jenkins. And believe me, Dick tried.
There's actually a really funny issue that I read years and years ago, and not in prep for this, but where he is at Hudson U being like hot guy around town. He gets invited out to a party. And he goes out to a party where they're at a bonfire drinking beer. And Robin is basically like, we're not 21. We can't drink beer. Silver Age. The 1970s introduce several writers who become forever associated with the Batman title to this day, including Denny O'Neil, who we've talked about a lot so far.
The late, great Denny O'Neil.
Steve Englehart.
Steve Englehart is a great one. They just released on DC a bunch of like Legends of the Dark Knight, Stevie.
Yes.
And they're great. They're great.
Legend of the Dark Knight, an all-time great Batman title. I can't believe they have that lapse. Mm-hmm. And Len Wein, who we unabashedly love on
Len
this
podcast. Wein, who, as we've discovered, created...
Everything you like about everything.
Yeah. Well, he created Lucius Fox.
Yes,
and
he did.
All the related Lucius Fox characters.
And I said, and Len Wein introduced Lucius Fox in 1979, where we're going to end this lesson.
Yeah.
Denny O'Neil described his take on Batman in a book called The Many Lives of Batman, Critical Approaches to a Superhero and His Media as, quote, simply to take it back to where it started. I went to the DC library and read some of the earlier stories. I tried to get a sense of what Kane and Finger were after, end quote. And that is why I believe when he came onto the book with Neil Adams, the silliness went away, the aesthetic style changed, and the tone style changed as well.
I think...
Which is also an idea that Grant Morrison adopts later.
Not enough fans have read or know the work of Denny O'Neil, who...
Travesty.
Besides travesty. Len Wein, there is a strong argument to be made for Denny O'Neil as one of the greatest comic book writers of all time.
Oh, for sure.
And he just passed away like last year, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he... Man, the stuff he did to Batman is stuff that we take for granted now, and he created it. And you would read a lot of those adventures now, and you would probably, most modern readers would probably be like, they're kind of goofy and lame, but that doesn't make them not great.
But when you go from something like Barbara Gordon's introduction or Rainbow Batman or World's Fight, it feels,
Gleep Jenkins.
I read a ton of it.
Yeah.
When Denny O'Neil, it feels so modern by comparison.
It feels elevated.
So modern and contemporary. And it is still dated. It's a piece of when it was created.
A brief advanced recommended reading question here. There is a book, and it's probably out of print, but I have a copy of it. It's called The DC Comics Style of Writing.
Mm.
It's written by Denny O'Neil.
Ooh, I would love to add that to
and
our recommended reading.
And he talks a lot about how he revamped Batman and his methods in that book.
Well, there you go. That's great. Great. Recommend. Mm-hmm. We will definitely include that. Okay. We're almost done. I promise. I have another quote from Les Daniels, who is a Random House published critic and writer. And it's because of his work with them that he's now a lauded comic book historian. He describes O'Neill's take on Batman as, quote, a vengeful, obsessive compulsive, which he modestly describes as a return to the roots, was actually an act of creative imagination that has influenced every subsequent version of the Dark Knight, end quote.
That is correct.
And I think that echoes what you were saying.
And
you
mentioned it earlier, but we should like be very clear. Denny O'Neil is the one who created Ra's al Ghul.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. We have a Ra's al Ghul episode.
Yes, we do.
So people can go check that out. Joining Neil Adams on the artist side during this new era is Dick Giordano, Walt Simonson, and Marshall Rogers. If you don't recognize any of those names, just Google them, Batman, and you will see all of these iconic images that have been homaged, used for film, and printed on t-shirts for our entire lifetime. I'm going to put this post on at GHL Podcast on Twitter because I want everyone else to weigh in on this. But Jason, I want to ask your opinion. If we're putting with, and I mean this with all due respect, and we're only talking about this because it's a podcast and it's fun to have opinions, who do you give more credit to for introducing the modern Batman, Danny O'Neill or Neil Adams? Are we going writer or are we going artist on this?
The correct answer is it's a 50-50.
Great. I love that. Because of because it's collaborative, of course.
Well, if anybody that's listening, and I know we do have some comic writers that listen to this podcast.
Yeah. And some great artists.
You know it's a collaboration. It's 100% a collaboration. And, you know, it's not all the writer and it's not all the artist. I'm going to slightly edge it to Danny O'Neill simply for the fact that Danny O'Neill post his Batman writing career became the Batman group editor.
Yes, he did.
For about a, I think 20 years.
If not 20, then close, certainly.
Yeah, so just because of that fact,
okay,
I'm going to give Denny the edge, but just because he worked on Batman longer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still very close. I still think it's 50-50.
Look, it's just a fun discussion to have.
I mean, you can't.
That's all.
You can't talk about modern comic books without talking about Neil Adams. It's impossible.
With the, without the Neil and the O'Neill.
Yes, without the Neil and the O'Neill. Yeah.
But have no fear, camp fans. The lightheartedness of the Silver Age was not gone. While comic book stories did take more gothic twists in Batman and tropes got a lot darker as we entered the 1970s, Super Friends the cartoon did debut in 1973, and it did cement those versions of the Justice League and of Batman in the hearts and minds of consumers to this day. And I will finally reveal to you in my last point, we're going to close this episode by letting you know that Julie Schwartz, who kicked off all the madness of the Silver Age, ended his 10 years as Batman's editor in 1979. So that is where we are going to end our Batman the Silver Age lesson today.
Woo!
Woo! That was a long and winding journey. One of the most fun parts of doing this episode for me was looking into Robin and Batgirl because I love young characters and I love their coming of age stories. And I just want to say that if people are interested in checking out those issues or checking out something similar, Jason and I also have a redheaded superhero named Jupiter Jet, and you can get her stories and see how they stack up next to Barbara Gordon's origin story if you go and check out our bookstore. Right, Jason?
Yes, it's over at jasoninman.com/store. We want to just put it out there into the world. You know, don't buy that book on Comixology or Amazon. Buy it directly from us because you get it signed and we throw in swag. And yeah, it's very...
And Brego hairs.
And it's very similar to the tone of these Batman stories.
It actually is. We were very influenced by Silver Age stories.
All right, so let's go to the next section of the podcast.
What is that?
I just put in a sound effect that Ashley can't hear. That is the recommended reading, where if you are looking for some suggestions on what to read about Batman in the Silver Age, Ashley's going to give you some great choices here. We've already given you a couple in the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want a full list of everything we've ever recommended for all 383 episodes of GHL, you can find that full list at geekculturelesson.com/recommended reading. We have a list for every single episode. So Ashley, what's the recommended reading for Batman the Silver Age?
So in addition to everything already mentioned, we are also going to include Batman: The Silver Age Omnibus Volume 1 with a little asterisk. This is a pre-order for 2022. So it will not come out till next year. But as somebody who did not have access to this omnibus and had to find these issues individually, it's so much harder. I would recommend checking it out. DC does a really good job with their omnibuy.
Is it about this is the Batman Silver Age omnibus?
Yes, but it's coming out next year. So it's a pre-order right now. But one you can get right now, which I referenced a lot in my research, was World's Finest Omnibus Volume 1. Batman, Robin, Superman, Avengers. They are fun. This would be a great coffee table book. This is also, I think, a great book for all ages of readers.
Cool.
I am also going to tack on Batman, A Celebration of 75 Years, and Detective Comics, A Celebration of 80 Years, because they do an excellent job curating specific issues that highlight each era. And I got some of my most useful reading on specific issues from both of these collections. So that is your recommended reading.
Cool. All right. Now We're going to, are we doing the teaching tweet, Ashley?
Yes, we are.
We are doing the teaching tweet. This is a section of the podcast that I've tried to get rid of several times.
For like 6 years.
But listeners like Gleep Jenkins keep bringing it back. So Ashley is going to sum up the entire lesson in the size that can only be contained of a tweet. You can see this tweet at GHL Podcast over on Twitter. Ashley, take it away.
Batman the Silver Age. Rainbows and Batgirls and long ears. Oh my. And by the way, if you go check that out, you can see our very important Boise Watch update from our Shang-Chi episode.
Say what now?
Yeah, remember when we asked for people from Boise?
Yeah, but how are we sharing this?
One of our sweet listeners sent a picture of him at Boise State U, and we tweeted it.
We did.
So we have an update on Boise Watch.
Oh yeah, we did put a shout out to our Boise, Idaho listeners. I'm gonna, you know what? Since we're here, we'll see who's listening. By the way, that was a really long tweet.
Thank you.
That was all in the tweet.
All of that was in the tweet.
All right, cool. I'm gonna throw out another update here.
Oh boy.
Hold on. We're gonna see if we have any listeners in Dayton, Ohio.
Okay.
Wait, did I Boise?
Boise, Idaho, Dayton, Ohio. Different cities, different states.
Thank you. Sorry. I thought, my brain. I'm a little tired right now. Dayton, Ohio. Do we have anybody listening in Dayton, Ohio? If so, take a picture. We gotta send that Boise guy something.
Yeah. No. I
haven't done that.
I'm on it.
Okay.
I'm on it.
I hope you are.
It's literally going out today.
So Dayton, Ohio, if you're out
you're
there,
up, baby,
you're up. We'll send you something.
First one who emails geekhistorylesson@gmail.com.
We're gonna send you something Batman related. We got something Batman.
Okay, great.
Something Batman.
Great.
Dayton Watch.
Dayton Watch 2021.
Dayton Watch 2021. I'm going to make a note about that. Ashley, what's next?
Next is our honor roll. And we have an international honor roll today, baby. I want to give a special shout out to Chris Cook of One Cross Radio. That is his podcast.
Sorry, Ashley, I got to pause the podcast right now.
Yeah.
I was literally, we do in GHL. And by the way, yes, I know I interrupted Ashley. Chill. Okay. This is a special moment and we're all going to share it together. Ashley. We have a little notebook that I keep notes in. That's how we keep notes of like, social stuff, whatever. I picked up this notebook.
Uh-huh.
And you will not believe what just fell out of this notebook. Literally just like I'm holding it in my hands right now.
Okay, what fell out?
This is what the winner of Dayton Watch is going to get.
Oh boy.
It is a Batman.
Oh my God, decal!
A Batman decal bumper sticker literally fell out of the notebook.
How long has that been in there?
A decade. I don't know.
I mean, probably. No.
So if we have a date in Ohio, that's what you're getting.
That's magic.
I literally picked up the book to write in
and it
fell out. I'm not making any of this up.
I'm trying so hard not to swear right now because like that's so cool.
I am not making this up. So that's what you're getting. You're getting this old Batman decal, which I think is also could be a dumb bumper sticker. It's pretty cool. It's the oval. It's the yellow.
It's definitely designed to go on a car or somewhere outside.
Okay, so let's go back to the honor roll where we read everybody. If you want to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we will read your review on the air and you get to join the GHL honor roll. Ashley.
Yes.
Who's joining the honor roll this week? You started tonight.
That's okay. Asterix, if you are international, we can't access your Apple Podcast. Email it to geekhistorylesson@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Chris Cook, who runs One Cross Radio. It's a podcast. He said we did not have to reader's review and he said we did not have to shout out the podcast. So I said I am doing both. I have listened to his podcast. It's really good. I recommend the Shin Godzilla episode personally. This review comes from Canada. So, of course,
Canada.
What's the second line of that song?
Gleeb Jenkins thinks of thee.
Our home and native land. So, Chris says, 5 stars, fantastic crash course.
Oh, thank you.
I discovered this podcast this past January and have binged most of the episodes. Ashley and Jason present everything in a fun and accessible way, always showing zeal for the topics, even when it's a character they don't like. This podcast is great for old and new geeks alike. It serves as an excellent crash course where you can learn and relearn about these wonderful characters or books or films, etc. I could tell he's listened to us a lot. In an easy to follow and digestible way. I have seen some reviews saying they get on their woke soapbox too much, and I have to disagree. While they do address things in a woke way, Jason or Ashley ever beat you over the head with it or do it in an accusatory or divisive manner. They offer their opinion, woke or not, and address how in modern times it might be different, more careful, more diverse, but not in a way that says boo what came before, which gives great moments of loving challenge.
Oh, sorry, wrong sound effect.
Did you shoot him?
No, I accidentally opened the hailing frequency.
Oh, that's okay.
There's your applause, good sir. There's your applause.
Thank you, Chris. And I
from Canada?
From Canada.
Nice.
And I want to say it's lovely to be seen like that, because that is what we mean when we talk about
that
stuff
like that.
That
is what we mean. We don't mean to like point fingers or naysay. It's all we want to do, because this is why we call ourselves the Mind University, because my favorite thing about listening to podcasts is to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And all we want to do is if we make you think about one of these geeky subjects in a different way that you'd never thought about, mm-hmm. guess what? That's learning.
Yeah.
And that's what we like.
It is.
So thank you, sir. Thank you from Canada.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks for emailing. It takes a little bit more effort to email the international reviews.
Take a screenshot. Yes. And we appreciate our international listeners.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's next?
Oh, is that the only honor roll?
That's the only honor roll.
Well, that's next is, guys, don't forget to follow and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Stitcher. If you really like this Batman episode and you know of a Batman fan in your life that's not listening to Geek Extra Lesson, go suggest this episode to them. We want to bring more students into the Mind University, and word of mouth is the easiest way to grow the podcast. So we'd really appreciate if you did that. Ashley, where can they find us on social media if they want to suggest, I guess, Batman the Modern Age would be the next one?
I think the next one is going to be called Batman the Bronze Age.
Mm-hmm. But it'll be very short.
But there will be a little bit of overlap with some of the stuff that we ended the lesson on, and we'll probably go up until 1990.
By the way, I just want to say to everybody that over on our Patreon is one of our goals. We have a Robin the Golden Age as a goal. But I'll tell you what.
I want to do it.
If a lot of people suggest it, we'll do it.
I want to do it.
Because we were talking about that the other day, and we kind of feel like Robin is like one of the only other characters that like you could kind of do this to.
That has enough content.
That has 80 years of content that you could go deep dive into it.
Look, and we talked about earlier in the episode, you've been asking for more Robin talks. We're going to give you more Robin talks.
Well, I know everybody keeps saying, they're like, guys, I wish you would talk about Robin more. Mm-hmm. And I just think we should do it. Ashley, did you say the social media? I'm sorry.
I don't even know. You can find us at facebook.com/geekhistorylesson or on Twitter at @GHLpodcast. We absolutely appreciate all of your recommendations. Please make sure that they get to one of those places so that we get them on our list, which is 500 things long now. Yeah, we're going to do Geek Extra Lesson until we die.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
7 years.
You think we're going to die in 7 years?
No, we've been doing the podcast for 7 years.
We have been doing the podcast.
Are you saying we're going to die in 7 years?
No, but that seemed to be what you were going to, because I said until we die and you said 7 years. Yeah. And I was, we're going to die in 7 years? We got a lot of stuff to do. We got a lot of comics to read.
Ashley doesn't know.
I'm very good at improv and picking up cues.
7 years. Play the sound effect for everybody. Ashley doesn't get to hear the sound effect.
I don't.
Ashley, you're not going to die. You're going to live forever. I'm going to make sure that Gleep Jenkins takes you into the immortal universe.
Oh, thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah, Gleep's a nice guy. Don't forget to follow Ashley, by the way, before she dies, on Twitter and Instagram, @AshleyVRobinson. Please follow me on Twitter and Instagram before I die. And don't forget to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/Jawin. We're going to tell our Burt Ward stories if you want to hear those and support this lovely podcast. Now we're here for the final section of the podcast where we called #StickAround, where we make sure that you stuck through all the plugs, where we do the promotions. Yeah, I know the promotions are annoying, but you know what? It's the only way that we can live for more than 7 years.
Then you can pay us to produce this podcast and take them out.
Well, the patrons do.
I know that. I know.
And we thank them for it.
Yeah, but the patrons... Our patrons are awesome.
They get a lot of
And they don't stuff. Complain.
They get a lot
They're
of
not stuff. The people complaining.
They're our super friends. They
are.
So Ashley, what's in #StickAround?
I have a very important question for you.
Okay.
If you could wear one of the Rainbow Batman suits, which color would you pick?
You might need to remind me of the colors.
Okay. You vamp and I will pull it up.
The rainbow is a beautiful thing. Do-do-do-do-do. I don't know. I do love that we came up with Gleeb Jenkins, though. I don't think he'll ever
come
back.
Your
what are our colors?
Possible options. They don't know the Roy G. Biv abbreviation.
I guess it would have been. What did I ask?
It's not Roy G. Biv. Pink,
okay.
Orange, yellow, green, blue, and purple.
I kind of think the green one looks cool.
Interesting. It's like a, it's a mint green. It's very light.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Green.
I know. We have all those Pop Funkos green. Of the Rainbow Batmans.
Those, that set mm-hmm. is one of my favorite Funko offerings to this day. Mm-hmm. So great. I would take the purple personally.
Yeah, I kind of figured.
Yeah. Well, there's no red option. It's pink. Pink is not my color. Yeah, I'm not a blonde.
I kind of figured you'd take that purple option.
Thank you for leaving it for me.
I didn't do that on purpose. Well, actually, I need to do that because if you're going to die in 7 years, I got to make sure.
Got to give me everything I want.
Got to make sure you're getting there. I put a call out to Gleep. I don't think he's going to get here in 7 years.
I will say if something.
Time relativity something is a hell of a thing.
Tragic happens and I do die in 7 years, this is going to be used against you in the court of law.
Will it?
Probably.
Okay. Do you want like black armbands like Superman when Superman died?
When I die?
Yeah.
No, I want to be turned into a tree.
Would it be like Brego's face? On the black armband?
It'd either be Brego's face or it would be like Tim's R shield.
Oh, you just want a Robin shield? People are like, why are you wearing that Robin shield? Well, because Ashley Victoria Robinson died. What does that got to do with Ashley?
Yeah, I'm a corporate shill.
At least you have R in your name. That is true.
Oh, there you go.
It could be the R of the Robinson.
There you go.
That's what we're going to say it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad we've had this discussion.
Intern Cat Brego has not chimed in. He's hiding in his high spot.
He's planning my demise.
He is. He's going to be the one that kills you, by the way.
He's just going to fall asleep on my face one night.
That's going to be the excuse when they play this in a court several years later.
The cat did it?
Yeah, intern Cat Brego did it. He told me.
Well, he should be alive in 7 years, so.
Let's hope.
You better be.
This conversation took a dark turn.
Just like the Silver Age!
Hey-o! Everyone, thank you so much for listening to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason, love my pixie boots, Inman.
I also think you made the pixie boot joke in the Dick Grayson episode. I am Ashley Victoria Robinson.
Good jokes never go out of style, just like Batman 66. And Ashley, please dismiss this class.
Class is now dismissed.